Well, you're probably familiar with the 90s phrase designer drugs. Our next guest thought that meant drugs that were carried around in fun little designer handbags. Well, she soon found out that it referred to chemists designing new molecular compounds. But she went much further down the rabbit hole and found that the world of synthetic or designer drugs has now morphed into a weird new chemical bazaar. People who call themselves psychonauts, chemical tinkerers who buy and sell synthetic drugs online or at festivals, using science to create drugs that skirt existing laws against controlled substances. So, for instance, cannabinoids instead of marijuana. We want to spend a few minutes on the other side of this looking glass with Vanessa Grigoriadis. She's contributing editor of New York Magazine and joins us from the studios of KPCC in Pasadena, California. So, Vanessa, this isn't a huge world, but it's a fervent one. And you say many of these drugs were invented in mainstream labs.
Well, quite a few of them were, actually. Somebody went online to these professors, either published papers or much of the time these formulas are patented and they are available on Google Patents. They're very easy to find. And somebody went and looked for psychoactive compounds that could get people high, and then they began manufacturing them.
And making a little tweak here and there. And these might have been created by researchers to have an impact on blood clotting or something. And you also found out about Alexander Shulgin, a Harvard-educated scientist who worked for a time for Dow Chemical, but left after he was the one who discovered that MDMA had psychoactive properties. Tell us about his life.
Well, he's a fascinating character, and I certainly argue in the piece that he's become the biggest icon for the new drug culture in America. He was a real and is a real chemist and lives on his land in Marin, where he has a home laboratory that was sanctioned by the DEA for a while. They wanted to be able to call him up if they came across something exotic and say, hey, what is this all about? At some point, he had a run-in with them, so they still kind of looked the other way for him. He is known as Dr. Ecstasy for discovering that MDMA had these properties, and then went on to make hundreds of other drugs that are either psychedelic or maybe just get you stoned or maybe enhance your hearing to properties formerly unknown to man. He really tried to stay away from scheduled compounds. So he would try to make his drugs without using either the precursor chemicals that the DEA considers to be illegal, or, you know, stay away from formulas that were too similar to other drugs that are illegal.
And what is his goal? I mean, we're, of course, thinking of Timothy Leary, who was very professorial and felt that there was usefulness for the psychedelics. Is Alexander Shulgin of the same mindset, that he believes that there is usefulness in these hundreds of novel drugs that he's making?
Yeah, absolutely. He, I think, believes, like a lot of people in this scene do, that you should have cognitive liberty, meaning you should be able to change your mind any way you want to in this country. Unlike Leary, Shulgin is a materialist, a naturalist, somebody who didn't think that the spiritual aspects of these drugs is something to discuss to death and promulgate and beat your breast about.
Then you have other researchers. I'm thinking of the Clemson professor, John Huffman, who researches how cannabinoid receptors regulate nausea and appetite, and this is for cancer treatment. It's his research that's being used to make synthetic cannabinoids, sometimes called spice or K2, synthetic marijuana, which were declared illegal last year. And he's called this kind of misuse, somebody getting his patent, somebody using his work, a royal pain in the rear end. How does the academic community respond when maybe it's these home tinkerers who have declared themselves chemists and are taking these patents and then modifying them?
Well, they're not very happy about it. First of all, it just makes it harder for them to do their research. Nobody wants to have the DEA looking over your shoulder while you're trying to make cancer drugs that just happen to hit the same neurological receptor as cannabis. That's a whole royal pain in the rear end. It really is. I mean, somebody described it to me. If you want to do work with illegal drugs in this country, you literally have to have a safe in your office that is bolted to the ground, and it can only have a combination lock, and only one person can know the combination in the lab. Additionally, they are concerned because some of these drugs could have neurotoxic or even physiologic effects. They're never tested on humans. Maybe some of them are tested on rodents. Some of them aren't even tested on rodents. These are just things that are being made in labs to, in the future, you know, even maybe theoretically think about down the line, if we combined a bunch of different things, we would come up with this great cancer drug.
Vanessa Gregoriadis wrote about these synthetic drugs for New York Magazine, and no surprise, taking them is not always a good idea. Remember that man running around naked in the streets in Florida, for example. We're going to have more with Vanessa. Also later, Jeremy Hobson, new Here and Now family member with President Obama's top advisor, Valerie Jarrett. That's still to come, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation about the world of psychonauts. These are people experimenting with psychoactive chemicals, many originally created for scientific research. But because the chemical structure of these compounds doesn't exactly match those of already illegal drugs, the use of them is, well, in a legally shady area. Vanessa Gregoriadis wrote about this for New York Magazine. Her piece is entitled Travels Through the Psychedelic Bazaar. She found that this experimentation also leads to serious injury. People doing these drugs have lost limbs. Some have died. Emergency rooms saw a record 49 totally new substances bringing people in 2011. And Vanessa, you write that these aren't just biochemists tinkering in their basements, but people ordering these drugs from manufacturers in China. How much of this is coming from China?
In the last few years, there's been a dramatic increase in the number of these drugs, particularly novel drugs, that are coming straight from China through the internet to your P.O. box. There are still home tinkerers, but it is becoming less financially feasible for them, frankly, because China, you can literally send them a chemical ID number, which is the formula to a certain compound, and they will just send you back a packet of that drugs and as many kilos as you would like.
What's the legality of that?
It's a gray market. I mean, it's not really legal, but are the feds going to rush down your door if you order some 2CT7 from China and this package with some white powder in it, which is always stamped not for human consumption, because that is a loophole in our drug laws.
So what if it comes in the mail and says not for human consumption and it gets caught, it
isn't? Well, I think you would have a hard time arguing that if you had a kilo of cocaine. I mean, otherwise people would just stamp not for human consumption on everything. But when you hear the term bath salts, now, of course, these are not bath salts that you bathe in. The reason that that compound, which is another one of these novel compounds that we're talking about, it just happens to be more amphetamine-based. And generally, it was creating psychosis because people didn't know how much to take. But it is not that different than meth or a bunch of other kinds of drugs we have and understand in this country. So bath salts were given that name because people were trying to be clever about it and say, we're going to ship this stuff to the U.S. and we'll sell it and we'll call it bath salt and stamp not for human consumption on it. That's how they got the term. Now they call it plant food. Sometimes they call it herbal incense. It's got all these sorts of monikers, and people in the know what it is. I mean, of course, the federal government is concerned about this, and the DEA got on the phone with me and said, this is becoming a big problem in our country. But as of now, the prosecutors don't really want to take the cases because this gets into a whole chemistry zone with juries that they have found has been very hard to prosecute. So
why? Because juries are sympathetic?
No, they're not sympathetic, but it's just so hard to tell what's legal and what's illegal when you're dealing with things people have never heard about.
Right.
You know, it's very easy when it's heroin. It's very hard when it's, okay, here's this weird compound that a professor in Berlin made 10 years ago, and now somebody's manufacturing it in China and shipping it to the U.S., and it's not actually chemically similar to the drugs that you happen to know.
Actually, give us some of the names.
Bath salts, of course, are an amphetamine group that sometimes are like MDMA, actually, and sometimes are just really like speed. There's the N-bomb series, which is what it's called on the street, which is an extremely popular hallucinogenic drug that's very similar to LSD, but apparently shorter in duration. There are a million different compounds that are actually considered to be synthetic marijuana. The latest ones, I think, are UR-144, and now there are these new ones coming out that are PB-22. I mean, it's an alphabet soup. Some people have called all of these drugs alphabeticals. The really interesting thing is that, particularly with the synthetic cannabinoids, they did make a large number of them illegal, the Obama administration, but new ones are coming out. There are just many more left to be discovered.
You spent time with a fellow who sells these synthetic drugs, kind of a leftover hippie, but internet savvy, a whole different animal. Tell us just a little bit about the people in this community.
I don't think it's more than 20,000 people, but because of the internet and the way that it's changed society in every single way, it's also changed drug culture so that there's so many bulletin boards and websites and encyclopedias of drugs where users really are adding in a wiki-like manner to the understanding of these drugs by putting in their personal experiences. They're called trip reports, and people take them very seriously. I took 25 milligrams of this at 0800 hours. My blood pressure was recorded as X, and I started experiencing effects 35 minutes in. And I mean, they chronicle these things. They go on for pages and pages, and this is actually data that researchers in Berkeley are like, wait a second, we now have hundreds and hundreds of these trip reports. And maybe we should learn more about the way these drugs impact people by collating this data and feeding it into a computer, learning about the different effects. I mean, part of that culture of sharing is also the investigational part and the novelty-seeking part. And many people who get into sharing about their drug experiences on the internet also become really enamored of taking new drugs. Just by virtue of it being new, they are fascinated and they want to know what it's like. And it's a culture that's young. It's, as somebody said to me, 150% male. It's a kind of geek, weird, geeky subculture, but very easy to access.
Which you did. That's Vanessa Gregoriadis. You can find a link to her piece in New York Magazine, Travels Through the New Psychedelic Bazaar, at hereandnow.org. Vanessa, thanks for telling us about it.
You're welcome.
Oh, by the way, quick note. Yes, I just had knee surgery. Legal drugs helped, but here in Boston, you don't complain about a little meniscus. So all went well. Thanks for your tips. And the future awaits, including our new co-host, Jeremy Hobson. That's after the news. Here and now.